And we will begin our final piece. And I know that we lost Kate because she was in Paris and it was past midnight. So I just want to acknowledge all of you for being here when you can be here. So this is one of my favorite pieces of this process, and it's called the Love Shield. And if you're in your workbook, it's a big giant circle. If you want to pull that up, if you have it. So let's start with why. Why is the Love Shield sort of the next piece in the process? So when we look at the pain gain, right, and we look at, you know, the reason that we sort of stay in our comfy, cozy condo, we're protecting ourselves from really creating connection, right? And if we loop this back to our, you know, our overall goal to create intimacy, to be irresistible, to quality men, to be empowered, right? So the reason that we stay in the cozy condo is because at the core, you know, we believe that we're flawed. And at the core of that, you know, is what we know is our gremlin message. And what I really know from teaching this again and again is that for a lot of us, there's a lot of shame around that message, right? That belief that we're flawed, that we're not good enough, that we're not lovable. And we create all these beliefs and thoughts and behaviors to compensate, to cover that up. And that's why our life sort of looks like it does today. That's why we have all these attachments that are not healthy. It's why we have our guard up. It's why we have our condo set up the exact way that it is. So each and every one of us basically has our own personal shield. It's your defense mechanism, and it is designed really to keep you in the game, but keep yourself safe, emotionally safe. So let's drill this down. And this is sort of like I always frame it up as, you know, why do I continue to stay stuck in box two? And if you go in and you look at in this love shield, the very circle, right, the center circle, you're really looking at that shame message. And it's some version of what's wrong with me. It's your gremlin message. You know, I'm stupid. I'm not enough. I'm not lovable. And this intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we're flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Something from our childhood, you know, we've experienced, we've done or failed to do, you know, in our earliest time here, you know, on this planet, it made us feel that we were unworthy of connection. And we take on this belief to survive a pain, a disconnection, or an emptiness that we experienced when we were in the non-individuated state as a young child. So again, for a lot of you, you know, you've gone to therapy, you've done the work, right? But I really, what I want you to hear on this is that we take on this flawed message, right? We're like a non-individuated young person. We're unable to distinguish the inner world from the outer world, right? And so when we have this message, right, the shame piece comes in because we are in self-judgment, right? We don't have tools of self-kindness and self-compassion. We are isolated, right? We don't create opportunities like we have here in this program to see that we're part of the imperfect human condition, right? So our brain sort of has that self-referential processing loop of self-judgment. We're in isolation and we over-identify with our mistakes and our failure, right? And we think, I am bad, instead of, you know, I just made a choice that's not in alignment, right? And we identify with that feeling. So, and it's important to distinguish between shame and guilt, right? So shame is, you know, I am bad, and guilt is I did something bad. So we have this message that we carry with us that ultimately becomes internalized. So we get this message and then we take it on and we create this negative internal parental voice. This is a voice we hear in our head, the voice that creates what's true for us. It's not the truth, but it's what's true for us. And this voice then becomes the paradigm, right? Thinking back to the first training session of the retreat, right? This voice becomes a paradigm and the model for all of our behaviors and beliefs. And it's constructed from experiences with our parents or the person that was in the parental role from our childhood. So the next piece of this then is, so here we are, we have this shame message, we internalize it, right? We internalize it, we make it as if it's true. And then we begin to identify with it in the family system and the birth of an archetype happens, right? We take on roles. And so we're in our family system and we take on the role. I think we talked about this a little bit today, right? The role as the good child, the problem child, the fixer, the rebel, the easygoing one. And so we take on these roles. Now remember, and I'm telling you all this, is the complete, you know, understanding that when we are in these roles, we are not in conscious choice. And I am teaching you this. I am presenting you with this concept. So in that space of release and disassociation from that role and that identification, you see how it comes to play, how we are doing it from default rather from conscious choice. So then, of course, you know, we have this archetype, and then the archetype, right, those roles take on certain behaviors. We take on the behaviors. For some of you, they might be overworking, busyness, worrying, anxiety, lying, caretaking, cheating, numbing, obsessing, apathy. Right? What are the behaviors that you have taken on in your roles and in your relationship? Now, ultimately, these behaviors, they become habits. Right? So we have the paradigm, we take on the role, we adopt the behaviors, and then we become unconscious in our feelings, our beliefs. They become habits. Sometimes they're conscious. Some of you, you know, are aware. Other times they're unconscious. And then ultimately what happens is that we take on these behaviors. We get involved with people. sometimes we even use substances, whether it's food or alcohol, whatever it is, right, that we use to fill the emptiness inside and avoid the feeling of shame. This entire system is set up, right, to put our guard up. That's why it's the love shield, right? When we have our love shield up, right, we can be resistant, we can hide, we can play it safe. We can try to prove we're lovable through perfection. All of these behaviors in box two are ineffective substitutes for love, for power, and for self-worth. So when we feel powerless, when we feel not enough, when we don't get the love that we want, right, our love shield goes up. Our love shield goes up. And as a result of all these behaviors from these roles, from these archetypes, from the negative internalized parent voice, we ultimately end up in a place where we live a life with the paradigm in which we have to protect ourselves, right? We're like the pirate, I call it, which is level two energy, or we're the pawn, which is like everything is happening to me, level one energy. So it's really important that when you look at this love shield, you look at when now in your life that you begin to throw it up, right? We push people away. We overfunction for people. I think Carrie's example of like, I don't want to set a boundary, right? Because that's not nice. So sometimes we're like, do you still like me? Do you still like me? Right, we don't want to get rid of that feeling or that knowing or feeling like it helps us to feel like a little bit in control still. So everything that we do, right, to some extent when we begin here, is that we're noticing how powerful our love shield is and how that love shield is set up so that we don't feel powerless, so that we don't feel that shame message, right? When we don't feel enough, when we don't have that love that we really deserve and want. And so in order to begin making a shift in our behaviors, right, we have to really look at what I call your vulnerability trap. And we're going to do this exercise in a little bit, but I want you to understand that as you go through and you begin to notice what you're noticing, the love shield's pretty stealthy, right? It's pretty tricky. And so our job here is to start to recognize it, because for some of us, we're like, I notice when I do that, like in a very specific situation, maybe with like my mom or with my daughter or my son or with this one guy. But for some of us, we're not even realizing how our love shield is just fully operational at all times. So we're going to do an exercise to kind of dive into that. What I want you to understand is that part of this release is to understand that really self-compassion and empathy is really the antidote to shame and to beginning to build that concept of self-worth and confidence. Because when we share our shame or we share our gremlin message or we actually understand it in a more powerful way and we speak of it and then we have self-compassion, right, we can be there with our own suffering of how this started. shame can't survive, right? Shame can't survive if it's spoken, if it's handled, if it's seen, if it's addressed. I love the work of Brené Brown, and one thing that she says, which is in her own version of, you know, shame hates empathy, which is why doing this work in community is not just, oh, it's great, you know, to be with other women, but actually community overcomes shame and isolation. So it's important here that you understand that when you throw up that love shield, you're not able to be vulnerable, right? And when you're not being vulnerable, you can't create intimate connections with anyone, but especially with men, right? I mean, the truth is, to be alive is to be vulnerable. To be in a relationship is to be vulnerable. And when the love shield is up, we let it control us kind of all day long. And we make really quick decisions to just opt out of uncertainty, to feeling out of control, because we just don't want to feel vulnerable. Okay. So the last thing I want to add before we go into really looking at your vulnerability trap is that as we notice what we notice, as we do this work, as we begin to be more empathetic to ourselves and others, as we start to practice self-compassion, turning towards ourselves and saying, I got you, right? We start to feel our feelings. And there is a researcher named Chris Gerber who came up with this concept of backdraft. And basically what happens is that, and this is why when you meet someone and you ignore the flags or you make a decision that you are going to open up and be vulnerable and, you know, put it out there, and you don't have this installed in a way in which you're able to be resilient, right? So you lay your emotional safety out on the line without having installed emotional resiliency. And, you know, you put your heart out there and we open the door to our heart and we allow this feeling in. And what happens is that it's like a backdraft of a fire, right? And so we give ourselves what we've been denying ourselves, right? We stop protecting ourselves, and all of a sudden it feels so big, like our feelings feel so big. And what will happen typically is then you put up your love shield and you're like, well, right? Especially if this person's disappears or makes you mad or doesn't communicate, or you make up a story because he texted you every day and three times a day and now he's only texting you twice, or he doesn't put an emoji, or, you know, whatever it is, right? What happens is when we allow ourselves to feel our feelings, and they feel good that we've been holding back for so long, and then what happens is it's like that oxygen, right? So it's like, poof, it blows up in our face. It feels too much in some ways, right? And our love shield goes up and we're like, oh my God, that was way too intense. That was way too much. And it's really important that when we have backdrafts, especially in this journey, that we understand that it is a vulnerability trap. And we go back to really understanding what's happening, that we label the emotion. We're going to talk about how to do this in a minute. Where are we feeling it in our body, right? We state it as a physical sensation, staying out of our head into our body. We stay grounded in it and we redirect our attention to the present moment. One of my favorite tools to do this is what we call color object. And simply what you do is you start looking at objects where you are, and instead of saying blue chair, you say chair blue, desk white, computer screen black, cup pink. Right? It's how we care for ourselves in that present moment. If you are in a place where you're like, I just want these feelings to go away, that's when you really want to open up your heart and you want to ask for help.